A new report has looked into whether we as taxpayers are getting value for the tax dollars spent. The New Zealand Initiative has looked at productivity compared to how much money the government spends on core sectors such as education and health. The report's author, senior research fellow Dr. Bryce Wilkinson, says after looking at numbers, he's concluded that the outcomes achieved are poor relative to the resources being used. Dr. Wilkinson is with me now to talk about his conclusions, which he outlines in the report. Fit for purpose, are Kiwis getting the government they pay for? Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Wallace.
So, yeah, before we get into too much detail, can you tell us, how you have measured the dollars spent in outcomes? What are the formulas you've applied?
What we've done is reviewed the research from a number of international organisations into the outcomes New Zealanders are getting in terms of socioeconomic indicators to the proportion of GDP which has been spent in each country by government. And one study we cite, a 2013 study, looks at that for overall government spending. But we also cite other OECD studies in health and education in particular, given their importance and the degree of government involvement in those two sectors in particular.
So you compare us to other countries, like, say, I think you focus on South Korea quite a bit.
Yes, these international organisations do. That particular study is the Canadian one by a Canadian academic economist, Professor Di Matteo, and he took 33 or 34 member countries of the OECD, and he compiled 19 indicators of how well those communities were doing in terms of health indicators, socioeconomic and macroeconomic ones, and compared them with the spending. And New Zealand came about 11th from the top in terms of value for money on that particular measure. Switzerland was third uniformly, and Australia fourth, so quite a way behind Australia. And Korea came out top.
And South Korea came out top?
Yes, that's right. He did his performance measures ranging from 0 to 10 of these 19 indicators, and Luxembourg came out on top with about 7.5, but it was spending quite a bit. Korea got a performance score of 5.8, but was only spending about 26% of GDP to get there.
Right, so the question to ask then is, what are we not doing within the sort of the findings of your report, and what is South Korea doing? Because I suppose it's a fair question, isn't it? If you look at a government, you want bang for buck as a taxpayer.
Yes, absolutely. And you want government to be focused on that. I mean, I think it's irresponsible to spend taxpayers' money without paying a lot of attention to value for money for the people whose money it is that you've been taken. And it's clear that the way our system is set up, it's clear from successive New Zealand Productivity Commission reports, which we cite in our research, it's just clear that our system is not generating an adequate focus in the public sector on value for money or productivity.
So what are a couple of things then that you focused on? I mean, you really honed in on productivity. We'll talk about that a bit later. But what are other outcomes? You looked at, for example, literacy rates in education, outcomes for patients in the health sector.
Yes, that's right. We'll do the education one first. The New Zealand Initiative's done quite a lot of research and reporting on issues of poverty and income inequality and welfare. And it's clear from that we've got a major problem for somewhere between 10 and 20% of the population are really struggling without adequate sort of education for levels of literacy and numeracy for the modern world. And in this particular report, we draw attention to an estimate that by age 15, around about 17% of kids don't have a basic level of literacy and numeracy, but the state would have spent on their education to age, just their school education alone, about $130,000 for that outcome. Now, we're not blaming school teachers. We know they're all doing a job under difficult circumstances, and we're seeing silly stories of political correctness stopping them from disciplining kids as young as age 6 or 7 for for smashing up classroom equipment. I hope that's an exception and not the norm. So we're not being critical of the teachers here, but we are saying, look, this just looks like a pretty appalling outcome for far too many of our kids, each age group by age 15.
And in terms of health, I mean, there are often sort of complaints from the public and indeed those working in the sector about their working conditions, poor outcomes. What in terms of delivery of healthcare? Because it's again, finally spread across the 20 DHBs. What can be learnt from the report in terms of better value for tax dollars?
A much greater focus on productivity in systems and organisations. So we cite sort of reports by the OECD, Treasury and the Auditor General and a Health Commission itself in their briefing to the incoming government. This incoming government, they said, look, they just need a lot more information about what works and what's a valuable use of resources. So just too much time and attention on to working away at the coal face, sort of at the bottom of the cliff, and not enough focus on how to pull the system together to run it in a way which is more focused on better outcomes.
Well, one of the things, if you look at South Korea, for example, compared to us, I mean, you cite this in the report, and that is infrastructure spending. If you take a look at what, say, Stephen Selwood from Infrastructure New Zealand says, and you do, you look at infrastructure spending, quoting aspects of our infrastructure lacking, these include piped water quality, wastewater, and robustness of electricity supply. Okay, so it's going to take about $7 billion to get New Zealand's water infrastructure simply to hold the line. You need to spend money in some areas, Bryce.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is about spending money more productively. And what the report is showing is optimistic and positive in that respect. It's showing if we look at other countries, we should be prepared to learn from other countries that seem to be doing better. But that's the thrust of this report. It looks like New Zealand has got an opportunity to do much better with existing resources. So we should look at this as a report showing opportunity.
You say in the summary here, arguably, the biggest elephant in the room for low well-being and material hardship is New Zealand's long-standing low rate of labour productivity growth. This is particularly debilitating for future well-being. Low national income per capita limits nations' options. So, and this has been a focus over the years, hasn't it? The fact is that we do have low productivity growth. Tell us about this.
Yes, well, it's been a focus of concern with economists, but not so much with central government. Now, you'll recall that in the early days, the John Key government set up a 2025 task force, and John Key, along with that, committed to closing the income gap with Australia by 2025. That task force was led by Dr. Don Brash, and it sort of folded in a couple of years when he moved into the ACT Party. And there hasn't been anything like that focus ever since. I mean, that was an unfortunate end to that initiative. But if you look at the speech from the throne from this incoming government, there was hardly any focus on productivity growth at all. And a related concern is that there's a lot of talk and focus going on and a lot of hot air, I think, in Wellington about living standards frameworks and focusing on well-being.
You're not a fan of the living standards frameworks. You're quite outspoken about that.
Yes, I am. I have been a critic of it, and this is all related because there just isn't a focus in that material on this low rate of productivity growth and what's causing it and how.
I just want to keep on with this, the productivity, because this seems to be very, very important in some sectors. Look, we have upcoming an interview with distinguished MIT economist Peter Temin. He wrote a book called The Vanishing Middle Class last year, and he notes in his book, from 1945 until 1975, US productivity gains and the wage gains of goods producing workers tracked very closely. Since 1975, productivity has doubled, wages have stayed flat. So a huge increase in productivity, wages flatlining. And I want to ask you, what makes you so sure that New Zealand is any different?
The long-run trend is unequivocal. It's economic growth, which I mean, look at it in China, if you like. Economic growth can create a middle class out of what was peasantry. And that's been the universal experience amongst the countries in the world which have succeeded to significant levels of prosperity. But it is an interesting time we're going through where there's been a big shift to the service economy, and now there's a big shift to internet computing and to the use of leisure time to play games and that sort of thing, and the big distractions of Facebook on people's time. So it's the allocation of people's time here which is interesting. But we've had the opening up with the internet of mass markets and outfits like Apple and Google and Facebook being able to roll out globally. And that is, those economies of scale and scope have created enormous sort of income and wealth inequalities. Yeah.
I want to touch on something else that you look at. I mean, comparing to South Korea, we have some big... We have some big spends that South Korea doesn't. If you look at if they're at the top, okay. So, we have safety nets. For example, a comprehensive and expensive superannuation scheme. I mean, Treasury data showed the government spent $11 billion on New Zealand Super last year. You know, it cost $5 billion in 2000. South Korea doesn't have any of that. In fact, I think that their super is around, it's peanuts, around $270 New Zealand a month. So there are big differences there.
Yes, there are.
And we've got to pay for that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you've put your finger exactly on the major difference between the European-centred countries and the Asian ones. So Asian countries like Hong Kong and Singapore have got, and Taiwan, you know, the Asian Tigers, Japan a bit earlier, they took off with much smaller government and much smaller welfare states than has occurred in Europe from the 1960s. So the question is...
The question is, what sort of society we want? I mean, South Korea might be at the top in some, but gosh, you know, there was an article in the Financial Times last year, more than 45% of elderly South Koreans live in relative poverty, by far the highest proportion in the OECD. The average is 12.5%. So the question is, what sort of society we want, Dr. Wilkinson?
Well, that's true. But it's also a question of how effective is government spending in producing better outcomes for New Zealanders? And while you cite that figure on Korea, in fact, it comes out ahead of New Zealand, marginally 5.8 compared to 5.5 for New Zealand, on that overall performance ranking based on 19 socioeconomic indicators. And I think New Zealand is a bit lucky that those 19 indicators did not include housing affordability. Well, I think we would have done worse. The housing figure they did include was just rooms per house, which New Zealand scores quite highly on.
Capital gains tax, put one in?
Well, we do have capital gains taxes already where it's been found reasonably practicable to do that. As you try and make a capital gains tax more and more expensive, more and more inclusive, you get bigger valuation problems.
Gabriel McClough said, look, if you have a comprehensive capital gains tax, I'm saying this because it sort of caused in some of the things in the report here, it diverts unproductive investment away from, you know, you're buying rentals and property, and you incentivize some of that money towards productive investment. That's surely got to be a good thing.
Well, absolutely, but only if the benefits are greater than the cost. Capital gains taxes, the more ambitious they get, the more distortive they get, the more you have loopholes and tax lawyers in. You have valuation problems. You have the problem of do you tax people for a gain they haven't realised? And if so, how do they get the money? But it's complete nonsense to propose that we're talking about a comprehensive capital gains tax. The government's made absolutely clear that it's not going to tax the owner-occupied dwelling. Well, that's a big proportion of most households' wealth, particularly in Auckland. So that's, yeah, the more you tax sort of productive investment, the more you're going to get people to go in and just buy bigger homes for themselves.
Right. Just finally, before we go, Dr. Wilkinson, because we've got to move on, but at the end of the day, I suppose, what does the report call for? Does the report call for, because you do go back into history and look at what a government might be like in 1900, do you call for small government in New Zealand?
Not necessarily. We're calling for much better government and this government to try and get the public sector more focused than before on value for money and productivity. Whether that, and as you and I have agreed, there's some areas where spending, there needs to be more spending. There are a lot of areas where there needs to be better spending. But we don't take a view on what we're saying is, for the same level of spending, New Zealanders could be getting much better outcomes, right, or we could have the same outcomes with less spending. Okay. That's a societal choice. We don't take a position on that.
Dr. Bryce Wilkinson, the author of Fit for Purpose, Are Kiwis Getting the Government They Pay For? What do you think? Text us 2101. Bryce Wilkinson from the New Zealand Initiative, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Wallace.